We are mindful that joy, sadness, celebration, and loss are an inherent part of our human experience, and we remember that through it all, we are connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to a loving community of family and friends.
Mothering is such a sacred task, and we really open our hearts and wish Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in the sanctuary this morning and beyond in the community. And on Mother's Day, it can be a nuanced, complex holiday for many of us. We embrace memories of our mothers and being mothers, and we honor struggles with difficult memories involving motherhood. And we honor that whole range of complex memories. And today, we're taking a step back and looking at the full scope of our lives and seeing how memories can lift us up, can hold us back so much more. So as we're going to be exploring memories throughout the service, where we have children in throughout from start to finish, I'm inviting everybody to get out your inner artist, your artist's way, and we have different sheets that we invite you to color. And we have folks who can, if you don't have these sheets, please raise your hand. We have some advanced participants over here. Could you guys help? We do. If you don't have stuff, if you don't have coloring utensils or paper, raise your hand and folks will bring them around. Okay, so please be doing that throughout, and we're going to pass out stuff to each other later. How wonderful it is when we reconnect with the reality that seemingly small things can trigger rich memories. Mother's Day is a time of many memories, but it can be just many small things that trigger memories. Diane Ackerman wrote a book called A Natural History of the Senses, and in the book, Ackerman says, "Nothing is more memorable than a smell. One scent can be unexpected and fleeting, and yet it could conjure up a childhood summer day beside a lake sometime long ago, or a family dinner, a pot roast and sweet potatoes. And sights can hit trip wires, whether it's with your mom or being a mom or something else. You could just see somebody kneeling and planting flowers in a flower bed, and it might explode a memory, but just almost like a vision comes out from your consciousness of something that happened or you wanted long ago. And memory does not always work so well. At certain times in my life, I've struggled with very poor memory. You may have struggled with memory yourself. In my early 20s, I suffered from depression, which impaired my ability to remember quite a bit. At one point, for example, I was in a study group in college, putting in as many hours as the other students, but when we got together for the practice test, I just drew a complete blank, and I knew something was wrong. The memory system was just not working right. I got scared at that point. It was daunting. And during that blue period of my life, I remember a dear friend of the heart asked me if I had had a happy childhood, and I was so upset because I could not remember if I'd had it. It was almost like the depression was a wall that I couldn't see past, going backwards, blocking my view. A number of studies indicate that we humans remember with less accuracy than many might assume. For example, when thinking about childhood memories, studies show that people are susceptible to believing stories that you heard about yourself, even if it's not true. So, you know, did we really, as a family, walk up and down the shore that day for many miles, or is that just something our big sister made up and now we think it's true? Pat Murphy and Paul Doherty are memory researchers, and they explain people tend to think of memory being like a tape recorder or a camera, capturing what's out there and then keeping it on the data file. And that does not match with current thinking of most memory researchers. That's not how they understand it to work. There's not enough database to hold it all as part of it. Research describes memory as an event as something like you constructing from bits and pieces. You are constructing from bits and pieces from what you saw and heard, experienced and felt, from the things people told you afterwards, from thoughts, implications. All of that is filtered by your attitude, by who you are. So that's a lot of factors. And the question comes, I think, for a spiritual journey of health and wholeness, a question becomes, which bits and pieces from an event do you keep to construct a memory? How do you process what you thought and felt at the time when you're constructing a memory? How does your attitude and who you are affect your memory? And how does your memory affect your attitude and who you are? So that's a lot of questions, but it's important to wrestle with it because there's a lot to gain and there's a lot to lose. Forest Church says that with practice, we can organize our memories in ways that prove most conducive to balance, reconciliation, and hope. With practice, and partly that's what we do in Beloved Community, practice remembering together so that we can have the most hope or justice or peace. Every day you make decisions about how you organize your memories. You might go to a social event, have a really nice time, but one person says two things that really bug you. Anybody recognize this scenario? How do you focus on remembering that event? You could, right? We all know I could choose to focus on the two things that person said that were so annoying to me, or focus more on the whole event that was so enjoyable and such a blessing. And many of us in community, this is a lot of the blessing of church life to me. I've had healing in my life that now I clearly remember many times of happiness in my childhood. I was lucky enough that my mom stayed home, sent me off to school, and maybe as a precursor of the jazz band life we have, I used to love to sing "When the Saints Go Marching In" to myself on the way to school. I'd get down on my knee like I was in a Broadway drama, just sing out in the neighborhood, "When the Saints." I was like, oh yeah, I did that. I must have been pretty happy to sing "When the Saints Go Marching In" to myself on my knee in the neighborhood going to church school. But how about you? Do you have memories on Mother's Day or any day that you could be rekindling in loving support of yourself, your family, and our community?
This is the time in our service where we pause to remember what's happening to each other in our community and in our world. Today, on this Mother's Day, there are people who are struggling, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them. They go out to the people in Hawaii who are dealing with volcanic disruption and destruction, to those whose lives continue to be touched by oppression and discrimination, to those who are dealing with illness and grief, because not every Mother's Day is a happy Mother's Day. But on this day in our own community, we have some things to think about and some memories that may be evoked as we remember Celeste Opfel, who died while in hospice care. Celeste and her husband Jim were long-term members of a UU church in Kirkland, Ohio, and her husband has been attending here since moving to Pennsylvania. We think about our own Jeff Smith, who is not in his post this morning, as he's recovering from foot surgery. And we're happy to have Janet Haas back with us this morning, and Erica Maselli back with us this morning after illnesses. And we're also happy to celebrate Chelsea Dearden's marriage yesterday. These are all things that we'll hold memories of. So, in the spirit of meditation this morning, I wanted to adapt and bring in a prayer from Reverend Evan Zimmer. So I'll ask you to settle in for a moment, get quiet, get centered. Spirit of life, today, let us honor all those who have made this world possible for us. Those who did the hard work of building a better world for future generations. Today, let us be mindful of the grief of those who have lost children through miscarriage, stillbirth, and death, those who long for children, and those who, for whatever reason, cannot be in touch with their children on this day. Today, let us honor the grief of those who mourn for their parents, whether separated by dementia, disconnection, or death. Let us honor those who fill in for missing mothers, the fathers, the grandparents, the foster parents, the aunts, the uncles, the friends, the community, the godmothers, godfathers, godparents, and everyone else. Today, let's be mindful of the ways we have each been nurtured and mothered by the mothers who gave birth to us, the parents who raised us, and by the many, many others who have supported and nurtured us, those people of all genders, shapes, sizes, and colors. Today, let us honor those who survived damaging and traumatic mothering. Spirit of life, we ask that they receive help to heal. Let us remember that not every mother is ready for her children. Let us turn aside from the myths of motherhood on a pedestal and remember that each parent is an imperfect human in need of more support than adulation. They are in need of our support. So today, with both joy and sorrow, let us be grateful for life, for the chance to live, for the chance to love, for those who love us, and the opportunity to nurture the future. And for those we've named, those whose names we don't know, and those whose names are carefully guarded in our hearts, let's pause now for a moment of silent meditation and prayer, after which we will sing Spirit of Life.
So some of us have a memory of doing Tai Chi together with the choir and Mark, and today we're going to be the congregation and Mark doing a little Tai Chi. So those words could mean nothing to you, and that's absolutely fine. But I'm inviting the kids to come up. So, and anybody else who wants to come up, and so come on up, children and youth, please. And we're going to get together up here. And then last time what happened, when did we do this, Mark? How long ago did we do this? 6 weeks ago. 6 weeks ago? How long ago did we do this? Something like that. Yeah, roughly 6 weeks ago we did this. And since we're on the memory and engaging memory, sometimes when something's a great memory, you think, well, why don't we try and repeat it? Do it again. So that's what we're going to do today. Mostly, this is going to be, and actually, if those who are standing, would you come here so the folks in the pews can see us? And just come this way. Good. Thank you. So good to be together. A lot of folks last time just remained seated and did these arm movements from their chairs. And it's just a visual cues, movement, and breathing. This is a paying attention exercise of mindfulness. So, you know, just take one arm right now and lift it and put it down. And you could be paying attention to your fingertips or your arms. Great. And one of the basic concepts that I'll say is just when we're going up, you're breathing in, and when we're coming down, you're breathing out. Okay? And we're just going to do some of that together along with Mark on the keyboards.
I never get tired of hearing Beverly sing or Mark play. Thank you so much. Our annual stewardship campaign is how USG pays our bills and achieves our beloved community's mission. This campaign is still in progress. Periodically, members and friends present a ministry moment about why USG is important to them, which also shows why your pledge in the campaign is important to all of us. If you have not pledged yet, please keep this in mind as Kira Baker Doyle shares her experience with USG with us this morning. Please welcome Kira Baker Doyle.
Thank you, Helena, and thank you, everybody. So I've been a member of this church since about 2015, and I'm currently a volunteer chair of the CSD committee. And I wanted to share a story with you about how this church helped me live my ikigai, a Japanese term that represents the intersection of what you love to do, what you're good at, and what is good for the world. In essence, it's your true purpose. So my ikigai is to support teachers in their professional learning and development. And what I do for a living, I'm a professor of education at Arcadia. So, you know, I get a chance to kind of engage in that. But it's rare that I have the chance to do it and engage in my ikigai in a way that kind of impacts me in a personal level. So in 2017, Jason Bender invited me to be the chair of the CSD committee and asked if I would share my expertise in designing teacher workshops. And I'm not sure if Jason really knows how much that request meant to me. It was an opportunity to actually use my unique experience in a meaningful way. I'm not a carpenter, I'm not a pianist, I don't have a very clear skill that I can share, but Jason saw what I did have. And it sparked something in me, and it reminded me of who I am. It legitimized my worth, and it let me put it to use. So, and I think about one of my favorite education theorists, Patricia Carini, who I consider a guru in the education world. One of my favorite articles of hers begins with a question: what is the worker without work? And at first, when I first read this article, I thought that question was somewhat benign. But as I live my life with the church, I realize that the core of the question is a question of humanity. What is the purpose? What is the person without a purpose? And so I thank the church for the opportunity to live my ikigai in a real way with purpose and joy. And I ask all of you to search yourselves for what is your ikigai and how can you live that ikigai through service to this community in all those different ways. Well, thank you.